Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner, Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, along with Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, or just through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcasts on iTunes.
And if anyone has noticed, Mark said that a little more quickly than he normally does, because today our first topic of discussion is energy drinks. I don't know if any of you saw in the New York Times, in the Business Day section of New York Times Wednesday.
See, we really do read the whole paper.
Yeah, just the food section, but only on Wednesdays when the food section is in there. There's a big can of Red Bull pouring into a glass, and there was this great article on energy drinks. And I find the idea of energy drinks disturbing.
Well, the article was saying is, hey, invest in these. Yeah, well, you can make a lot of money. People are buying them like crazy.
Sort of like tobacco companies, I think.
It's very
investment
similar.
For a long time. Here's the idea. Now, this is food, sorta, and so that's why we feel we can talk about it on the show. And what's interesting is you may not realize that restaurant employees who work crazy hours until 3 o'clock in the morning have a little stash of Red Bull. And one of my amusing...
I think it's also college students. I don't think it's just, we live in a college town, so
True. We
see a lot of it.
But I think one of the amusing things that people don't realize is that I had a wine steward once who, that's a position in the restaurant where they take care of the wine. The sommelier is the person who brings it to the table and is in charge of getting it to you, but the wine steward has a very important job as well, whose job is to keep and store and bin, in our case, 1,000 different kinds of wine.
And keep track of them.
And I remember walking into the white wine cold storage room, and right next to the Grand Cru Burgundy was one bin devoted entirely to Red Bull. And I thought, that's got to be against company policy.
I'm not sure all of our listeners know what Red Bull is.
Red Bull is an energy drink they're sort of sweeping the market these days, and these things really do work. So if you're a college student studying late at night, if you need a little pick-me-up, they really do work. What exactly they're doing to you, we're not so sure. Yeah, we know that...
You know, when I see these kids, and the kids today, but I see
old
these...
Old man.
I see these kids drinking this Red Bull. It harkens me back to life in the dorm 20 years ago, where I saw people snorting Vivarin, chopping up their caffeine pills and snorting it so they could get it in their bodies fast.
Get a B in the exam. So let's talk about what these energy drinks are. This was a great article. It was about from the business aspect, but here's how the article starts. It says, every day, Tom Cabrera, a 27-year-old auto mechanic who lives in Middletown, Rhode Island, drinks a can of Sobe No Fear energy drink on his way to work. Later in the day, if he goes to the gym, he downs another before his workout. He says, and this is where it gets scary, he says he probably could not get through the day without one. It lifts me up 1 minute, I'm dragging, and then it's like, pow, I need another one. What does that sound like to you?
I think it's amphetamines. I'm pretty sure.
This has scientists and nutritionists worried. Energy drinks have as much sugar and roughly 3 times the caffeine of soda, and some experts peg their popularity on their addictiveness.
Yeah.
That's not really fair marketing, is it?
You mean like, and this is a real tagline for one of these drinks. Meet your new addiction.
I object. I object, and I don't
like
it at all.
I'm not done with my old addiction.
Well, it's not just the caffeine either, because Rollin Griffiths, a professor of behavior biology at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, says the amount of caffeine necessary to produce dependency and withdrawal symptoms is about 100 milligrams in most people. A can of energy drink has 80. Now, a cup of coffee also has 80. But it's not just that stuff. In addition to caffeine, another purportedly energy-enhancing ingredients in drinks have attracted the attention of European health officials. France has banned Red Bull in 2000.
Banned it.
And so have several other European countries because they don't know what the interaction is with caffeine and the amino acid taurine and gluconeogralactone. I don't even know how to pronounce it.
I'm not sure you said that right, but I don't care.
But it's a type of sugar that's produced by human cells used in metabolism. These are drugs.
Mm-hmm. I think that what some of these people are doing is they're hiding behind, this is a ginseng-based drink, or it's guarana, or all these other ingredients that are potentially good for you, B vitamins, things like that, amino acids. And there's no study, there's no understanding of how these things work in concert with each other and how much damage they may really be doing and how much they may be becoming addictive.
We go up against soft drink bottlers all the time. Let me read to you one of the toadies from the Mark Bottling Association. Mary Merrill, group director for sports and energy drinks at Coca-Cola, says, the reason taurine, guarana, carnitine, and ginseng are in full throttle is because customers want them there. We make no claims about any of them. We believe in marketing our brand, focusing on the brand's personality rather than its ingredients. It's a liquid, ma'am. It has no personality, but it does have ingredients. And if those ingredients are...
Can we give out a toady? We haven't given one out in so long.
Toady
Can
award?
We give one?
I don't think she merits a toady.
She doesn't
award.
Merit it, okay. But, all right. She's not evil enough.
But the idea about this, and why we thought it was relevant to talk about it, is that I'm watching people look at their attitude toward food. Mm-hmm. And we don't even know what it is that's in here, but it's been sold to us by a big corporation,
yep.
And we buy it for its effect.
Right. I mean, Francis and I, this morning I purchased four of these and brought them into the studio, and Francis and I have just tasted them. And you're not buying these for the way they taste. Okay,
well,
there's no doubt about that. They are actually disgusting.
And this really speaks to what we talk about all the time. When we talk about heritage turkeys, when we talk about buying from local farms, when we talk about eating real foods, those are the things, if you want energy in a sustained way, mm-hmm. if you want energy that's not going to addict you, that's how you get healthy, you know? Because like other drugs, if you need two Red Bulls to get through the day or you're dragging, guess what? You're addicted to Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people that are. And they used to have ephedra in it, but they took the ephedra out. I mean,
that's a good thing.
Yeah, but
people started dying from the effects of ephedra, so they took that one out.
But real food, again, good taste is revolutionary. Anyone who has good taste has to drink one of these things and think, that's disgusting.
You can't possibly drink any of these four things and think that they taste good. So there's only one reason to be drinking this, and the only reason to be drinking these is for the high, okay, and for the rush that you get from these. And that's the claim. They're not even masking that.
Right.
That's the claim. The claim is, you know, what was the name of that dumb coffee we had with the double the caffeine?
Zoom.
And they said, Zoom, that's what happens. You get double the caffeine and Zoom. And that's their marketing. The marketing is, we can make you go faster.
And finally, in response to the fact that these things are full of ingredients that no one studies, no one really knows what
they're
do.
They're full of what, Francis?
I'm sorry, they're full of ingredients.
Oh, ingredients. Okay, I thought you said something else.
Not food. But no one knows what these things do. This is part of the marketing, is they put these things on the market, and what they say is, here's Christy Hink, a spokeswoman for Sobe Beverages. She says that if consumers are curious about ingredients, they should do their own research. I love that.
Because we don't want you to know, so we're going to hide everything we can.
Hey, listen, we have joining us in the next segment, we have the mayor of New Brunswick, Mr. Jim Cahill, who's come down to talk about the finest restaurant town in all of New Jersey. And we'll be talking with him about the Christmas season, dining in New Brunswick, and the way restaurants have played a role in the redevelopment of our fair city. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, you're back at The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, the best restaurant city in all of New Jersey. And we have with us the mayor of our fair city, Mr. Jim Cahill. Welcome to the show, Mr. Mayor.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome to the show, Mayor.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Francis.
We recently lit the Christmas tree in downtown New Brunswick, and the mayor was on stage and threw the switch, and Santa Claus came out, and we were actually the MCs of that performance. And so the Christmas season in downtown New Brunswick has started.
Officially kicked off.
New Brunswick has gone through, in the last 25 years, it's probably the most successful example of urban redevelopment of a true city, not a little town with a little downtown, but of a true city, in all of New Jersey, certainly, and one of the best in the country. Restaurants played a big role in that, didn't they?
I would say restaurants were one of the leading factors involved in that. It wasn't just a big role. It may have been the most prominent role in a lot of it. The ability to attract people to a downtown area, you have to have quality types of opportunities for people to take advantage of.
Uh-huh.
And the restaurants were there almost from the very beginning. And they have been a key to success. They have partnered with the Cultural Center, again, making New Brunswick a destination, not only for our own residents, but to send the messages out to people in the greater Central Jersey area that New Brunswick is a place you want to be.
But, you know,
So I'm sorry. What are the other keys to the to gentrification that certainly happened to New Brunswick, and that so many other cities across that certainly the state of New Jersey and I think across the country are now trying to emulate? New Brunswick in the '60s was
in trouble,
certainly in trouble, and has emerged from that not just to kind of recapture some of its own glory, but to capture some new glory, I think. And I think there are a lot of people around the country that are curious as to how that happened exactly.
Well, I mean, there's the long version and there's the short version, so I'll give you the short version.
Yeah, it is only a 60-minute show.
But it was recognized some 25 to 30 years ago by the people who were involved in the private sector and the public sector that neither entity could do it on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So they formed two organizations, including New Brunswick Tomorrow,
mm-hmm,
and New Brunswick Development Corporation. New Brunswick Tomorrow, a.k.a. NBT, handles the social service side of the city's redevelopment efforts. Most people think of redevelopment, revitalization in New Brunswick as the brick-and-mortars construction kind of thing that's going on, but there's a social service side that's mm-hmm equally important, if not more important, than the development side. New Brunswick Development Corporation handles the construction side, assisting developers and or doing their own development projects. And then, of course, there's the government's role. So through this private sector, some for-profit, some not-for-profit, and the government side, partnerships were formed.
We're on the for-profit side, Jim.
I've noticed that. I've been to your restaurant. You're on the for-profit side.
And you left with your wallet a little bit lighter on the way out the door.
Not much, and not undeservedly so.
Oh, you're sweet.
But it was that partnership and the recognition by all the entities involved and the major players involved that you can't do it alone, so you need to collaborate.
You know, one of the interesting things, though, is, I mean, it seems as though New Brunswick, like a lot of downtown, redeveloping downtowns, they embrace the arts. But somehow New Brunswick translated that into private sector business and then into people moving back into the downtown. And this all started in the late 70s, early 80s, before the Food Network, before anyone could know that celebrity chefs would be some of the most famous people in the world. There were no such thing as all that. And I have a friend who lived in downtown Pittsburgh, which was, in a way, building-wise, successfully redeveloped.
Mm-hmm.
5 p.m., though, it's a ghost town,
yeah,
because they
mm-hmm
didn't bring in the people. So the buildings are there, people come in there to work, and it's like an empty mall at night. New Brunswick is more busy at night than during the day, and people are moving in, and housing is going crazy downtown. Were restaurants part of the vision from the beginning of redeveloping New Brunswick, or did that just sort of happen?
I think it was part, you know, I've been connected with the city for 25 years in an official capacity, 15 years now as mayor, and 10 years before that as an assistant city attorney for New Brunswick.
15 years as mayor, I am getting so old.
Yeah, you are. It's amazing how old you're getting. But somehow yet I stay young. I don't understand that.
The Dick Clark pills you're taking.
So, but for 25 years, you know, I've had direct involvement with the city's revitalization efforts. So going back that 25-year period, the restaurants were very much a part of it. And I can't tell you whether it was the restaurants that initiated it on their own,
mm-hmm,
because there were and still continue to be people with a great entrepreneurial spirit in the restaurant industry in New Brunswick, equally true today as it was 25 years ago. But certainly the city itself fostered that kind of spirit. You know, the restaurants are creative with regard to not only putting out good food throughout all of the downtown area and beyond,
mm-hmm,
but also with regard to attracting people through different entertainment venues, et cetera. But the restaurants recognized right away the advantages of working with the theaters in downtown New Brunswick. You know, so that coordinating your seating times, getting people out on time to get to the theater, offering opportunities after shows to
mm-hmm
make sure you're open for either late nights, food, hors d'oeuvres, et cetera.
You know, it's what's great. Funny, you know, what's interesting about that, and I think there's a cautionary tale to cities out there who are using the arts as an engine of redevelopment, because I think New Brunswick did that effectively, and one of the things that it did really effectively was it allowed the private sector, the small businessman, to then capitalize on that, and then it promoted the private sector restaurants, which promoted people on the streets, which
mm-hmm
promotes people moving into town, which promotes the stores that are on the streets now. And we've restored a vibrant streetscape to New Brunswick.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, what I've seen other places do, we went head-to-head. I testified before the state senate against the director of the Paper Mill Playhouse up in Millburn, because what they did is they have this theater, which theaters have a liquor license by nature of being a theater. As long as they have 100 seats, they can serve drinks a half an hour before and an hour after any night they have a performance. And what the head of the Paper Mill, so the Paper Mill Playhouse has built their own restaurant right on their own grounds. And so now this restaurant goes to a nonprofit entity. It's all going into the arts, and none of it's going back into the community. And what they wanted to do was to turn theater licenses throughout the state into regular liquor licenses that could serve 24/7, which meant that you basically got a free liquor license with the theater, which meant that it all went to the arts, and you never drove the private sector.
Well, and what's part of the problem with that is what would happen in cities like this, and frankly, I think even what happened briefly in New Brunswick before things kind of changed and people started venturing out to the restaurants, people would come to the theater, and they'd valet park their car at 5 minutes to eight. They'd go into the show. They'd come back out. They'd be escorted out to their cars, and off they'd leave the city. And so the arts were definitely bringing people into the city, but just for that performance, and then they would come, and they would leave. And what you see now is the street is filled with people as a show comes out. And people just, like, I don't want to say like spiders, but kind of venture out into all different routes, and they fill the streets with energy and excitement, and it's a fun place to be.
I was on the streets at like 2 o'clock in the morning last night. There were a couple of them that looked like spiders. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking with Mayor Jim Cahill of the city of New Brunswick. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left Restaurant and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick. And we're here talking with the mayor of New Brunswick, Mr. Jim Cahill. And we were talking before about, and those of you who are listening on the podcast or listening nationally and internationally, New Brunswick, New Jersey, you can go to their website at newbrunswick.com. And not the Canada one, the American one. And it's an amazing city. It's a true urban center. It's one of the larger cities in New Jersey. You put New Brunswick in Nebraska, it'd be one of the largest cities in Nebraska. And it was in a serious state of it was on the precipice of collapse, I think. Not of collapse, but of urban malaise in 1969, 1972.
I think it was in urban malaise in 1969,
yeah. And
my
it's,
friend.
And it's, you know, it's the city on the hill now. And we were talking about how an investment in the arts is what a lot of communities do to try and turn things around. But then that needs to... You need to go to the next step and have the arts drive the private sector economy that can then move things forward. And restaurants, I think, are probably the first businesses in line to bring private sector money as an engine. How did New Brunswick look at that? Was that...
Well, we clearly recognize that the arts and the cultural center in particular needed to support the existing businesses that were there, not vice versa per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would work, obviously, you know, with the restaurants and the businesses in the downtown area to support the cultural center, but we chose deliberately not to make the same mistake, which I would say NJPAC has made with regard to their restaurants that are in
crazy.
The theater.
NJPAC is, again, for the people not from this area, is a theater in New York, and they've kind of encapsulated themselves and all of their services.
They've invested
and all of their restaurants are encapsulated into one large fenced-in property.
Millions and millions of dollars in a beautiful performing arts center, but the restaurant is right there. You never have to leave the grounds. And so you drive off the highway, and you'll often see mounted police on the pathway on nights of performances from the highway to the theater. Then there's either a police car stationed there all the time so that you feel safe until you get into the compound. And then, you know, you feel like you don't want to leave. And New Brunswick didn't do that.
I mean, it's great for the theater itself, perhaps, you know, because it's one-stop shopping. People feel some convenience going in and coming out quickly. But that really doesn't add anything to the city itself and or to its environs. You know, we are working with New Brunswick Development Corporation on some types of development projects that would specifically enhance the cultural center. In other words, in those types of situations, there's a benefit, I suppose, to be derived by the theaters in that they're deriving additional income. But they're deriving the income at the expense of someone else. So what we are looking to do is either through additional residences in downtown New Brunswick or office space and dedicating the revenue streams that would otherwise go to the private sector, float it right back into the cultural center. Those are the types of things that we're collaborating on, but not doing a direct hit on the businesses. Because quite frankly, if you don't, if the restaurants and the retail businesses in the downtown area or the areas that surround a theater district aren't successful, then you're just chasing your own tail, and you're never going to make it through the arts aspect anyway.
Well, you know, I do think, and I don't want to beat up on Newark because I think Newark is making some great strides, but I think that they've only taken step one. And step one is to begin to add jobs to the community and do things like that. And it needs to be more than that. You need to add to your tax base. You need to add to your tax revenues. You need to add the businesses that are not necessarily associated with the theater need to be able to crop up around
that area. And look, a city cannot stand on the arts alone. One of the greatest things about our cities and our cultural about our cities is their cultural centers where we come together and we, you know, art is a part of the community. But we also need to work. You know, we also need, you know, art overall, yes, it gives back in many ways, but it's subsidized. You know, it doesn't generate enough money to pay its own bills. If it generates enough overall in the community by spurring the private sector engine to create the taxes that can then subsidize the art, that's the way it's supposed to work. And sometimes people lose sight of the bigger picture. We're talking with Mayor Jim Cahill, Mayor of the City of New Brunswick, New Jersey. We'll be back to talk more with him after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Mayor Jim Cahill. He is the mayor of the city of New Brunswick, where our restaurants are located. We've known Jim for a long time, and we've watched the city of New Brunswick go through quite a redevelopment. And we're talking today not so much about food, but about the role that restaurants play in our communities. And I think this is very interesting. If you're out there anywhere in the world, because we get, like I said, and I love that we get emails from different countries and all over America, and you want some pointers on how restaurants can play a role in and the arts can play a role in the redevelopment of your city or urban center, you can contact us, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll tell you how to contact the mayor. I served on the board of directors of New Brunswick City Markets for about 10 years, which is the downtown association, so I worked with some broader issues other than restaurants, and it's fascinating how you can really make some missteps. You can put a multi-million dollar arts center in the middle of your downtown and have it just sit there like it's in a cage and not do anything. Or you can integrate it with the community. New Brunswick made a lot of wise decisions. And for one of the things that New Brunswick did, Princeton is a town that's very near here. And a lot of people say, and I'm not saying this, but many people say, why don't you open in Princeton? There aren't any really great restaurants in Princeton. And there are some good restaurants in Princeton. But the reason I say, first of all, is all the Princeton people come to New Brunswick to eat because we're only about 20 minutes away. And one of the reasons is Princeton is notoriously difficult place to do business. They don't want business. And they treat you as if you're lucky to be able to do business in Princeton.
Well, as if you're the enemy as opposed to a partner.
Right. And in New Brunswick, I think what started in when there was an urban malaise and we really needed businesses in New Brunswick is you guys welcome business and they make it easy and understandable to do business here. Mm-hmm. And for restaurants, there were some specific things that you did to put people on the streets. When we opened our restaurant in 92, we were on the front lines, and the first thing that anybody asked me to do was to sit on the Downtown Association, and they told me I could be chairman of the security committee.
Gave you a badge.
And they should have given me a badge.
So Francis walked around the town for a little while going, hey, you kids, get out of there.
I had a close relationship with the police department, and now it's beautiful down there, but it was challenging. One of the things that New Brunswick did was they passed the outdoor cafe ordinance to put people on the streets. That was a bold move.
That's exactly what I was going to talk about.
Why don't you tell us about that, Mr. Mayor?
Well, We were trying to create, in addition to streetscape improvements that we were doing with bricks and landscaping, et cetera, new lampposts, and try to create a certain kind of quaintness about the downtown, but yet still keep our urban core look as well. We thought that we needed to really foster some outdoor activity, not necessarily just people ambling about in the downtown area.
You got to give them a reason to amble.
You got to give them a reason to amble.
A place to amble, too.
And with the outdoor cafes, and Stage Left was one of the very first, if not the first, that we had in downtown.
I think so, yeah.
We actually allowed the restaurants to expand their operations into the city right away along the sidewalks. And that would include the opportunity to serve food outside as well as, you know, alcoholic beverages, et cetera. Now, obviously in a very controlled environment.
Mm-hmm.
But what was happening is people saw on a very nice evening, either in the spring through summer and into fall, that they could be outside and enjoy a lot of the amenities that are offered when you're outside. Your location in particular was great because of its proximity to Monument Square right across the street. And there's a certain ambiance that's then created
mm-hmm.
that you're not just going to a restaurant to have some food, et cetera. You can actually be outside and enjoy the weather and the elements that are out there as well.
Well, we have a beautiful fountain across the street. I mean, it's not Trevi, but it's certainly a nice little fountain that sits in the center of New Brunswick and is really pretty and a nice place. The sound of running water makes
sure.
makes for a nice background. But New Brunswick didn't just encourage outdoor cafes. I mean, almost facilitated them. Almost said, not only do we want you to do this, we here's how to do it. Here's what we can do.
If you're in New York, you know, you have to have a permit and pay, you know, a huge amount of money. But it's a crazy thing to even be allowed to do it. If you're 1 inch over, they come. In New Brunswick and in Princeton, you know, God help you to try and get, you know, mm-hmm. a sidewalk cafe there. They make it like, again, they're doing you a favor by putting you on the city street. And New Brunswick opened it up to say, okay, here are the rules. It's a basic fee. This is what it costs. If you serve liquor, you have to put a fence around it, and you have to leave handicapped access, and we'll come and inspect it if it's safe, and it's nominal, and open up on the streets. Well, mm-hmm. what did that do? That put, you know, like Mark said, that people used to come to the theater, get in their cars, get out of their cars, go to the performance, get back in their cars, and drive away. Well, if they see that little – so that puts a police presence and a people presence, because what cities need is people on the streets
mm-hmm.
and people to have a place to go and talk to each other. Having those outdoor cafes, people walk by – and they were like, it was like putting milk out for a cat. You know, they sort of like looked at it a little bit. Maybe they'd stay a half an hour after the performance. Maybe they'd come a half an hour before. And slowly, I mean, the city streets in New Brunswick at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night now. I mean,
and
you know,
some of them some of them just kept coming back and expecting us to feed them and coming back and expecting us to feed them.
As long as they pay. But putting people on the streets is tremendously important. Do you find... They say in the reason cities declined is because people used to have to – one of the reasons cities declined is people used to have to live near the factory where they worked.
Right.
Well, we're changing over from a manufacturer. We've changed over from a manufacturing economy to a service economy. And so now I think – I'm seeing retirees move into New Brunswick. I'm seeing people whose parents were in the suburbs come into New Brunswick. And I'm seeing that across the nation and move back to cities. I think it's that people want to live near their social life. You want to be able to walk out to your social life. Do you find that – having all these restaurants and bars brings New Brunswick together as a community? I mean, you're a politician. Does it bring New Brunswick together as a community?
It clearly does. It clearly does. And if you take a look at the metamorphosis of the city over the last 10 to 15 years, there's been a process that's involved in that. And it's not just people using their social life, but it's also their work life, too. People,
mm-hmm.
I generally think, are busier today than perhaps they were 20 years ago, not across the board, but in large part. So they're coming to – we created job opportunities in the city where unemployment rate went from 13-plus percent, you know, 10, 15 years ago to now around 6 to 7%, which is the lowest unemployment rate for an urban center in the state. We put a great deal of emphasis on the healthcare communities, the educational communities, and, of course, the private sector. Now people that – are working here, they say, okay, we'd like to, you know, this is a pretty good place. You know, there's a great social life. I can run out and get a bite to eat. I can get a you know, a couple of cocktails after work or et cetera. So they can go to the theater. So they say, all right, maybe this is a place I really want to live. And then they wind up now. We see the residential boom in the city of New Brunswick, where we've had, you know, nearly 1,000 residential units built in downtown New Brunswick over the past 5 to 6 years, and we have another 1,000 in the pipeline.
And those are mid-range to high-range residential units. We're not talking about, you know, just building another slum.
We also have some affordable units as well, and we've also done new public housing in downtown New Brunswick. But the beauty is you can't distinguish not only because of the way it looks, but also because of the people that are there,
right,
one from the other.
You know, I think that one of the interesting things, though, that about these restaurants, and it's one of the reasons that Mark and I, when we were looking around, we looked at a couple of different towns, and we looked at an Italian restaurant, and we looked at a sports bar, and we looked at an Irish bar, and we decided to just open up this American place, an unlikely venture that has turned out quite well. Because the common thread that ran through all those was that it had to be a locus of community. It had to be a center of community. Mark, you lived in South Brunswick for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And in South Brunswick, if you wanted to meet your neighbors from South Brunswick, if you don't belong to the PTA,
right,
and you don't belong to a local church, where are you going to go? Where are you going to run into your neighbors? Where
and
are you going
to
run
into? You had to get in your car.
You where
had
you
to
gonna...
get in your car to go to the supermarket. You had to get in your car
and where are you
to,
gonna...
to take your friend, your son to his play date with his friend.
And where are you going to run into the mayor? And where are you going to run? You want to run into the mayors and councilmen and assemblymen from surrounding districts? Come to New Brunswick and walk around and stop someplace and have dinner. Mm-hmm. Because there's a community of people that, you know, as adults can go out and run into each other, be it at the Starbucks, be it at a bar, be it at a restaurant. And I think that's one of the great things that restaurants can do, one of the great ways that a city can utilize its restaurant and its nightlife. It's not just about decadence and consumption. It's about running into people in an adult environment.
Yeah, but I really like decadence and consumption.
Yeah, let's go have a beer. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today in the studio, we have a very special guest, the mayor of our illustrious city, New Brunswick, New Jersey, Mayor Jim Cahill. Mayor Cahill, we were just talking a minute ago about liquor licenses and what they can do to a downtown. Are they something that you think can add, subtract, or you need to be careful that they fall into the way you want them to?
I think if the owners of the liquor licenses are responsible people, I think it can be nothing but beneficial to a community. It gives a municipality a place where people can congregate in an adult situation and environment and relax a little bit and enjoy, you know, somebody else's company, do a little bit of business.
Mm-hmm.
Last night I was at Dolls after work around 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, met up with a couple of people that I needed to talk a little bit of city business with afterwards and, you know, had a couple of beers and exchanged some ideas, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely past time that I wanted to be in the office anymore. You know, I'd been there for 12 hours already and I needed to be in a different environment, yet I still had some things I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I pick up a phone and I'd say, look, let's get together and let's go someplace. Somebody picks a place, and in New Brunswick, as you were pointing out before, it's a great place to, you know, you bump into people.
All the best
deals happen over meals.
Yeah.
We know that.
But yeah. I want to say the other thing about having a place with liquor licenses and bars and coffee shops, because I think coffee shops fill this role as
you're
well.
Right. You're right.
If you're in a suburb that only has restaurants, right, or a bar on a highway, You may meet your friends, call up your friends, and go there for dinner. But if you're in New Brunswick, you may run into the mayor, the police chief, the fire chief, the city councilman, your elected officials, the pastor of the church. Because if you're going to a restaurant that has a bar, it's not a place where you show up, there's your reservation, you sit at your table with your friends. You don't get up and walk across the room. In New Brunswick, actually, in the restaurants, people often do get up and walk across the room and talk
all the
to
time.
Each other. Because there's that bar there, or they catch each other's eye and they'll go meet at the bar and say hello to someone. That's what a community is all about. But liquor licenses are very difficult, I think, to manage for a city because, and depending, number one, a liquor license might be appropriate in one neighborhood and not in another, and a responsible owner may be destabilizing to a neighborhood or may add to the value of a neighborhood. How do you manage those kinds of things? What kind of problems do you face in New Brunswick with that, Mr. Mayor?
Well, we have, New Brunswick has a lot of great neighborhoods, and the neighborhoods are oftentimes very different. We don't have as many of the neighborhood bars as we used to have.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, I think that we've seen a natural decline in the numbers there because people realize you can make more money with your liquor license in another location, mm-hmm. generally downtown.
Right.
We have a lot more opportunity to get people to come in. The problem would be is if the liquor license in a neighborhood is going to attract a certain element, particularly like in the 5th and 6th wards of the city, in the college areas.
The 5th and 6th wards, there are a lot of New Brunswick residents in those areas.
Residential
and
wards.
Families
in the city,
and also college students intermixed.
And what will happen is if there's the liquor licenses are catering to college kids, let's say, mm-hmm. and the college kids have a different lifestyle than those of us that work, it's not unusual for them to be out like you restaurant guys until 2 or 3 o'clock.
I was going to say, the college kids probably have a lifestyle pretty similar to our job.
We're well behaved, though, Mr. Mayor.
I've seen you at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. That's subject to debate.
But I'm quietly ill-behaved.
This is true. So, you know, naturally you have now a number of people who are in a liquor establishment until 2 or 3 o'clock, till 2 o'clock in the morning. They go grab something to eat. Now they're just simply walking back to their dorm or their apartment in the residential neighborhood. You having a conversation with 5 or 6 of your very best friends as you're walking back to your apartment at 3 o'clock in the morning sounds like somebody's actually talking in your bedroom.
Right, it is obtrusive.
Whereas if you're doing it at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it doesn't make that much of a difference.
But you're talking about an old city. I mean, this is a very old city, so that we don't have a quarter acre of lawn between your front bedroom window and the front door.
Yep.
But I think that speaks to a very interesting. I used to live in the 5th ward, right next to a bar called the Plum Street Pub, which was eventually shut down.
Right.
Because they were not only a bar in a residential neighborhood, they were an irresponsibly run bar in a residential neighborhood.
Yep.
And they would offer pictures of Red Death for $2. You would see this advertised in a very sophisticated way
on
signs attached to telephone poles throughout New Brunswick.
I mean, you look at some of these places and you say, what is the purpose of this place? Is the purpose to get in there, get people as drunk as they can be, as fast as they can be, and then let them kind of out into the city limits thereafter, or is it a place for people to meet and socialize and enjoy themselves?
Well, you get back to the responsibility of the license holder, and in those situations, what happens is once they've crossed the line, the city council conducts disciplinary hearings, et cetera, and they do a great job of disciplining liquor license holders and giving them opportunities to clean up their acts, and when they don't, they yank the license.
And that's a difficult thing to manage.
I think our listeners would like to know, how do you go about managing whether a place actually gets a license or doesn't? How does that happen?
Well, there's ABC regulations, alcoholic beverage control regulations that are promulgated by the state of New Jersey. So that's first and foremost what you use. And the person has to have a background that demonstrates that they can handle the liquor license. They can't be involved in certain industries. We can't be a police officer, et cetera, and be involved.
So if somebody's got a bad history with liquor licenses, you can prevent them from opening a liquor license.
Loan shark is out.
It depends who you loan money to and what your rates are. But if it's the standard loan sharking rates, it would be bad.
Okay. Well, the
2 weeks, one thumb.
You know, the other thing.
Once you get into the thumb, you definitely can't give a license.
I come from a small city in North Jersey. My dad was a fire chief in Orange, New Jersey. And Orange, New Jersey was not able or has not thus far not been able to successfully redevelop. And so I've always been fascinated with cities. And it was amazing for me to be able to take part in the redevelopment of New Brunswick to whatever small extent we have. But what's amazing to me about restaurants is they provide jobs. I mean, when the big corporations come in from out of town, they're looking for some people without college degrees, et cetera, and so forth. But the restauranting is still one of those jobs where you can come in as a dishwasher. I mean, most chefs, most owners started as a dishwasher, and many of them don't have college educations. I mean, do you see that as a valuable engine for jobs in New Brunswick?
Definitely, particularly because it goes across the board for all income levels. And there's a lot of people who are at the lower income spectrum that will take advantage of those types of jobs. But given the opportunity to move up within the industry, they can make real money eventually by becoming managers within a restaurant and/or somebody who actually is going to own one at some point.
I've had guys start with me at $6 an hour who were eventually making $75,000.
You've had guys with you who started with not being able to speak English and wound up owning their own place.
That's true.
And that's really an amazing American story. Sure. We need to come back in just a moment. We're talking talking with Mayor Jim Cahill, Mayor of the City of New Brunswick, our fair city, at the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Catherine Lombardi in Stage Left Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest is Mayor Jim Cahill, Mayor of our fair city. And I cut you off right before the break.
Well, we were talking about not only the workforce that and the opportunity to move through, but one of the key things about the redevelopment of a city and why restaurants are so successful in a place like New Brunswick and where we attract the business community is a lot of people, particularly today, there was a lot of office space, retail space, but predominantly office space that was built in the suburbs. Land was cheaper. People felt they can get on a major highway and go somewhere and go to work, and then at the end of the day, they just get back in the car and scoot home. And then they go back to the suburban community that they're from. And as you were talking about before, Mark, with regard to if you don't go to the PTA or bump into somebody at those types of places, you really are not interacting with anybody. Today, we've seen a real trend that people who are looking for new offices, a place to relocate their business, are no longer looking to go to suburban communities because there's nothing for the people to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's lunchtime. They either go to the cafeteria or they bring their brown bag. They're looking to opportunities to interact. They want to go outside their front door of their office building. They want to grab a great bite to eat. They want to go pick up a little, do a little bit of shopping. I got to pick this up today. Otherwise,
I need to go to the post office.
Yeah.
They
get it in one-stop shopping. So this trend of office development that was going out to suburban communities some, 10 years ago, the pendulum is swinging quickly in the other direction.
And it makes a tremendous amount of sense. I mean, if you look at – I talked to Larry Daniels, who was the prior manager of the Hyatt Hotel in downtown New Brunswick, and he used to say, the way we market – because, there's some challenges to marketing the hotels, and there are some newer hotels that have opened up. And he said – I talked to – when people say, well, we're thinking about this other hotel on the highway, he says, well, that's exactly what it is. It's a highway hotel.
Yeah.
And like you say, it's sort of, you see this office complex out in the suburbs in Roseland, New Jersey, right? And what do you do at lunchtime exactly? Roseland is next to Livingston, where I went to high school, and there's an old Becker's Farm, which now is just an office building farm. How sad. What do you do at lunch? In New Brunswick, we go out, we grab a bite. Even if it's just to walk to the Starbucks down a city street, stop in the C.H. Martin, pick up a card for your grandmother, and maybe say hello to another human being.
But we all do that in the city.
Yeah.
We all escape from our office and the doldrums of our day. And honestly, Francis and I, our doldrums probably aren't as doldrumy as a lot of other people's.
I dream of doldrums.
Of what we do.
last night when the HVAC went out, I was thinking doldrums. I need doldrums.
But you take a couple of minutes, you take a walk out down the street, you go into your friend's camera shop and say hello and maybe buy some film. Or do people buy film anymore? Do you actually do that? But whatever, you buy some film.
You do a George Street camera. Greg Ritter won't let you out without it.
Right. Or you buy some paper for your copy machine from the guy around the corner.
The point of the whole thing is, the thing about this city that we live in and the thing that restaurants can do if you're looking to redevelop a city out there, and even if you're in your suburban community, a city, and frankly, a city with a bar and a liquor license, it provides a locus of community and a place where people come together, especially when it's over good food. That's the best way to do it. Mr. Mayor, thanks for taking the time to join us today in the restaurant, guys.
I really enjoyed the opportunity. Thanks, guys.
You've really been great. Thanks so much for being here with us.
That's Mayor Jim Cahill, the mayor of the city of New Brunswick. You can find out more about him in our fair city at newbrunswick.com. That's the American New Brunswick, not the Canadian New Brunswick. And you're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.